Okay, be honest. Have you ever sat down with your morning coffee, fully convinced you're about to conquer the world, and then somehow found yourself scrolling, snacking, alphabetizing your inbox, and wondering why your brain feels like it's running dial-up internet? If that feels a little too relatable, listen up. Everyday Dose is coffee with benefits. It's the same delicious coffee you already love, plus lion's mane, collagen protein, chaga, and nootropics to help support focus, mood, and mental clarity. Imagine your morning cup not just waking you up, but helping your brain fire on all cylinders without the jitters, without the crash, and without the sudden urge to reorganize your sock drawer. And because the collagen is built right in, you're supporting smoother joints, stronger hair and nails, and healthier looking skin, all at the same time. Everyday Dose is coffee plus benefits. They combine high quality coffee with powerful ingredients like lion's mane, chaga, collagen protein, and nootropics to fuel your brain, boost focus, and give you clean, sustained energy all day long. It tastes just like coffee without the downside. No crash, no jitters, just clean, sustained energy. Right now, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit, free peppermint mocha creamer plus for the holidays, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/mindful or use code MINDFUL at checkout. This holiday season, what does comfort look like to you? To me, it's slowing down and embracing the shorter days by allowing myself more rest. A curated space allowing for the best sleep I can get is the cornerstone of this process. Avocado Green Mattress makes this possible with everything from breathable bedding to handcrafted mattresses. Create your natural holiday oasis with avocado products. You can transform your home into a peaceful, grounding retreat and provide the foundation for deeper rest, calmer mornings, and a healthier daily routine. Plus, avocado mattresses and bedding are made with certified organic and sustainably sourced materials. Prioritize rest and recharge with Avocado's organic comfort. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today to create your natural oasis and save big during their holiday sale. Avocado, dream of better.
But at the time that this was happening, everybody thought I was like this woo-woo crazy person. And I'm like, but I'm living proof my psoriasis is gone. But I do think autoimmune, especially because autoimmune runs in my family, when I look back as the experiment of one, I'm like, well, actually, I think my grandmother's rheumatoid arthritis started in a grief. It started with the loss of her husband and the loss of a child. You know, I think when you start looking at some pieces, stress is one of the worst things for our body. I think if you live in a zero stress environment, but you ate McDonald's, you'd be much better than eating broccoli in a high stress environment.
Lisa Parda, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you. It's an honor.
You are an author. You're also a radio host. Lisa and
Yes.
Robin on the mic. That's got to be kind of intense. So on the radio, it's all live, I assume?
It is live, and if it's FCC compliant.
Oh, that makes me nervous just hearing those words.
Right, which means you have to not swear.
I would violate that, I'm sure. It wouldn't take me long. I might last 20 minutes on the radio
Yes,
on a good day.
it has changed my entire vocabulary on how much I swear in my regular life now.
Interesting. Yeah,
Because I was a
that's.
huge sailor of a swear.
Okay.
I swore like a sailor. So it sometimes I just pause because I'm like, I don't know how to insert an adjective that isn't an F-bomb.
Now, on the radio show, is there like a focal topic, or do you and your co-host Robin kind of just talk about whatever you want?
Whatever we want. We are entrepreneurs, so we're business-minded. We have a lot of business owners as guests. We love fashion, we love food, we love the spiritual world. We've had on a shaman, you know, we've had on MMA fighters, you know, so we're very curious people, and it's wherever our curiosity takes us and wherever we think we can have an interesting conversation that the community that we're live in is interested in. We try to keep it fairly local, but we have a number of opportunities to have guests that would pull us outside the area. So we're in our third year, and we're going to start also adding Zoom type, and it won't be live.
And this is in the New England area? That's what it
sounds like. Yes, New Hampshire.
Okay. Great. And your book is about food. I think on the cover it said something like food is my love language. Did I get that right?
Yep. My love language is food. Yep.
So that resonates with me. Food is my love language, but on the giving side. I think that's the way I want to give love, is by preparing food and feeding people. Yes. I think it's become kind of a household joke in my home that that's how I try to earn validation, by feeding people.
So you're the cook?
I am the cook, for sure, yeah.
Excellent. What do you love to cook? What are some of your favorite dishes?
Well, I've definitely gone through phases. I mean, my favorite thing to cook and eat is just some form of steak. We do eat a lot of meat, and I like the simplicity of cooking something that needs very few ingredients and just how to make the most of it and let the product do the talking. I also find it very fulfilling to connect deeper and deeper with the source of the food. So I've spent a lot of time kind of curating where we bring food in from, and getting to know different farm sources and such. And we have a garden also, and we have chickens. So we try to stay a little bit more connected. It's hard this day and age to really, for people in general, to know where your food comes from. And we try. It's not perfect, but we try. And then the ultimate for me is when I harvest something from the wild out behind our property with a bow and arrow. But that's pretty rare, because as much as I love to hunt, I'm just not good at it. So, but that's the ultimate connection, feeding my family something that all that hard work brought in. But
if you think about how it's supposed to be, you're not supposed to be able to go out and kill something in 5 minutes.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. You have a job. You have other things to do. So
there are days, though, that I wish I could just do that.
Fish.
Right.
You'd be a little quicker fishing.
I would like to be able to put dinner on the table from the water, but where I live, it's not easy to go to a place to catch something that you would want to eat. I would really question the environment that fish came out of, and probably would not want to put it through my digestive system.
I understand. And when I talk about hunting, it's, there's a reason why meat actually has a sacredness to it. It's a living thing. Sure. Going out and hunting it with a bow and arrow is probably one of the purest forms of doing it, where you're on par with nature, probably more so than someone would say hunting with a gun, although I do think you still have to stalk it. And
there's still a lot of work, but there is something. Some
lugging it out. if you follow a deer or an elk somewhere and you now have to bring that back to civilization, I think it's probably the purest form. It's the closest, I think, to the sacred we can get with meat production or consuming meat. And I think as a person who has an ethical dilemma about eating meat, because I love animals, but I do have to eat meat, I'm very anemic. So if I'm not having steak, I get iron poor pretty quickly, no matter how much spinach or green vegetables I'm eating. But
Is that a noticeable thing?
Oh, yeah. So anemia, you feel bone tired, there would be nothing you could do to have any energy.
Well, that's got to be challenging.
Yes. So I've gone vegetarian several times in my life for ethical reasons, and I notice something's happening because I am consumed by hamburgers and steaks. I just watch people eating them in restaurants. I start getting
your craving means
murderous.
Yeah. It's funny. I've always felt that cravings are really important to listen to, and I think they're generally vilified, unless in the context of a pregnant woman. Then it's the whole village wants to feed that woman's cravings. But outside of that context, it's the craving's the enemy. And I'm I think we're so out of touch with our own bodies. We don't know how to listen to what that craving is and ask what it means. What is it telling us that we need?
We've had so much sugar in our diets that we are mostly craving sugar when we talk about cravings. But if you're not eating a highly processed diet, you can listen to your cravings more and more. Because I grew up with a very processed diet. The only thing I craved was sugar.
Well, sugar is our cells, most cells in our bodies, our favorite substance to make energy. So a lot of people are screaming for energy with that craving. And some people think that, well, if you have, let's say, excess weight, that you should have enough energy because you're walking around with it. And what I've learned is the excess weight people have is fuel, potential fuel, that can be converted to energy, but we're not good at it because of whatever blockages that are interfering with our ability to make energy out of, you know, the excess food. And there's a lot of things that contribute to that, you know, a lot of things that are part of our environment and our culture and our food system, of course. And what was your foray? Like, why are you so into food? Where did that come about?
So I grew up at McDonald's, and no complaint.
Like in a restaurant? How's the housing situation in McDonald's?
So I will say I grew up in it because it was basically the only food I ate 5 days a week.
Gotcha.
As a young teenager, my mother decided, because she had to go back into the workforce — this is the 70s, I'm 53. So, you know, in the 70s, she's going to have to go into the workforce. And she says, well, I can't be doing everything. I can't be a stay-at-home wife cooking, which she didn't want to do anyways. Let's be clear. So this was the perfect thing to dump when she went back into the workforce, that and laundry. We outsourced everything to a dry cleaner, and our laundry was outsourced, and so was our food. And it was whatever you want to eat. Do you want pizza? We lived in the center of a city. I lived in Somerville, Massachusetts, which is 3 miles outside of Boston. We had ample food that was walkable. We could walk down the street and have Mexican. We could have Italian. We could have pizza. You know, we could have whatever we wanted from restaurants. I also had a McDonald's a half a mile from my house. And once I got old enough to request it, I requested McDonald's. So did every other child. And I was indulged. So I didn't grow up with cooking in my household. My father tried to get me to cook because he wanted me to be healthy. He had a completely different opinion about food. And every time he tried, it was met with some kind of, you know, altercation. I joke that, you know, he wanted me to murder a lobster with him. You know, he brings home live lobsters, and he's so excited to have lobsters with his young daughter. And the lobster's tearing the bag because one of the claws is free from the rubber bands, you know, and the lobster's crawling and, you know, like doing this thing with its tail where it's scooting itself out of the bag, and I'm crying and he's trying to shove it in a pot. There's this huge — my mother's yelling from the other room to leave me alone. You know? The lobsters are screaming in the pot, you know, like it's a scene.
Yeah, sounds it.
And I'm young, very young. And under 10, and he says, you know, where do you think your hamburger from McDonald's comes from? Where do you think your chicken nuggets come from? These are animals. You know, you're killing things. Like, this is — because I'm like, you're killing them. You're killing them. He's like, everything we eat is food that we've killed. So I take a hard line. I'm going to eat French fries, Doritos, and white rice because, you know, I'm not participating in this. So probably that was like my first time into real, like, trying to eat vegetarian, for — I didn't want to eat animals. I loved my cat. I loved dogs. Then it sort of, every time I went vegetarian after that, it was like a morphing on, well, I don't know where my food is being sourced, or I saw some documentary about what they're doing, what farm industrial raising looks like, so now I need to give it a break because I need to stop seeing that every time I'm cooking.
Yeah, and so, that's a gross sight, you know.
It is a gross sight, and it's really not healthy. We need another system for it, but we want food to be convenient and cheap.
Yeah, and there are other great systems. It's just, though they're repeatable, they're not easily scalable.
Yes.
So it's like the answer lies in more local cultivation of food, and it's tough. So, like, that's a big machine to turn around.
Yeah, absolutely. And so then I get into my teenage years, and at 12 I go on my first diet with all of my friends and all of our mothers.
At 12,
because we're growing female bodies, and doesn't that look like — curves looks like fat when you're in the 80s and you're seeing Kate Moss, you know, looking like a prepubescent boy. She's so skinny. She looks — it's heroin chic, they used to call it on all the magazines. And so then we didn't want curves. We didn't want any kind of meat on our body. So we started dieting. And since I was eating McDonald's, the only thing I would eat in a day is McDonald's, because that's 1200 calories.
Okay.
So food was also the enemy a little bit. And when you don't know how to eat healthy, and you're also trying to be on a diet, you're counting calories and you're prioritizing that over health. Because you care about, a donut is 120 calories and an apple is 70. Well, I'll kind of have a donut when you're 14.
Yeah, sure.
Even at 25. I could pick a donut.
I grew up on very similar. I mean, we had some home-cooked meals, but they were all like the Kraft mac and cheese type cooked meals. But I also had access. You know, I could get on my bike and ride to any fast food, and I did. And that habit went deep into my 20s. Like, having a fast food or fast food adjacent, like lunch every day, was just everyday routine when I was at work.
Well, and it's cheap, and it's quick. I have a half an hour for lunch. I have to drive there. I want it to be cheap. You know, so that's the life I grew up with.
And we're back. Sorry about that. We lost you there, Lisa, for a little bit. You were talking about your husband saying, or your boyfriend at the time, saying, I'm too big and cool to eat that slop, so let's change things up.
Yeah, and he took me to these really good restaurants where you could get a baked potato, a piece of fish, broccoli. And then we moved in together, we bought a house that was financially such that we're not going to be able to eat out at restaurants every single night. So then I start learning to cook. And I mean, at first I'm having the Mrs. Bud's chicken pot pie and stuff that makes it easy and quick. But then I start watching PBS. This was before the Food Network. And I start watching Nick Stellino. And he seems so excited and he's making such great food. I buy his cookbook and I start learning to cook for myself. And I find, wow, I like the tangible aspect of cooking. I like starting something, having something completed. I like getting better at a task. And I like enjoying what I've made. So when I was younger, my grandmother used to allow me to make cookies. Like on Sundays, she would get the Toll House chocolate chip bag. And we would make cookies from scratch. I always liked that process. So when I was younger, I liked to bake. I would always bake our cakes for birthday parties. I got a cheesecake recipe from a neighbor, and I, at like 14, started making these amazing New York-style cheesecakes. So I always liked the kitchen. I just didn't have a good relationship with it because I was very much in my 20s trying to be a size zero while also incorporating food, which was very difficult. But when I started eating real food, I did lose probably like 15 pounds. I was eating way more food than I had ever eaten, and I had lost weight. And so that clicked in my head that, wow, you know, I can actually not be starving myself and maintaining a weight. And then from there, I got psoriasis. My father passed away when I was 24, and I just had this really intense grief period, and psoriasis had kind of broke out on my body. And again, this was back 30 years ago. And at the time, they didn't know it was an autoimmune issue, the mainstream doctor community. So I went to a dermatologist. At first, they said it was ringworm. Then they're like, no, it's psoriasis. There's nothing you can do. Use this cream. Be lucky it doesn't cover half your body.
Right. Steroids seems to be their one tool.
Yes. That was the only tool they had. And it was topical. And I kept saying to myself, but this is inside. This is coming from this direction. You know, and it started my lifelong, I'm a lifelong learner. I love biology. There's great books about it. So I started to learn. I figured out it's an autoimmune issue. I saw a dietitian, a nutritionist, and before you can see him, you have to wait 6 weeks because he has very limited time for all of our nonsense, right? He knows what's going to fix you. He's going to give you you get one appointment. You only need one appointment. You have one follow-up. You're cured. So he has you keep a food journal. And I'm working in corporate America. All my lunches are provided for me for free. And they're all catered, like D'Angelo's subs. Like, it's a different restaurant every day. We have a refrigerator full of Cokes and ice creams and to keep us in the office. They don't even want us going anywhere.
Productivity.
It's the year 2000. So remember the year 2000 bug we were all afraid of?
Oh, yeah. Those are
fun times. I worked for a company that was data entering and fixing all of that. don't leave. Stay in your chair. I didn't do that particular work, but I supported that group. And as I'm writing down over 6 weeks, am I really going to write down I had six Cokes today? So by the time I see him, I'm like, I can't even present this food journal to someone because I know it looks bad. But I go to see him and we do an elimination diet. My psoriasis is cured in 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
I lose probably 2 pounds a week. And I'm like, I feel like a different person.
Do you remember what you kept on the elimination diet? That's very interesting to me. I'm sorry, we just had some technical difficulty again, but we're back. You were explaining, Lisa, what you were eating on the elimination diet. And the reason I ask is because I think it's really common that people have issues that I think an elimination diet would be a life changer for them. But I know that people go about that differently. So you were detailing, you basically, there were a couple grain options, no processed food. You had salad, but no vinegar. Was the no vinegar because of like the histamine in it? You're just reducing histamine. Do you know what that was about?
He had said, because I said, how is vinegar a problem? He said, your body is very acidic. You need to alkaline your body. So up front, it was no dairy, no eggs. Eggs are a big allergen for people, and I was eating a ton of eggs. I was also eating cheap eggs. You know, right now I eat pasture, organic raised. Often I have them from my friends or my cousin. I'm getting, you know, healthier eggs. But there was no eggs. There was no wheat, no gluten. There was a lot of no's. No alcohol, no vinegar. It was no's. It was just no.
Well, it's an elimination diet. Yeah.
No sugar. No added sugar. No chocolate. No dairy. No, no. Anything you want to eat, no. Don't eat that. But what it did was it prevented me from eating out. I ate salmon probably 5 days a week. I ate chicken, steak, ate baked potatoes. I could eat as many carbohydrates as I want, as many calories as I wanted. And I could eat corn. That was the only thing that wasn't eliminated that I thought was interesting as I got older. Because corn, I learned, is a big allergen for people. And I don't know if it's because corn is an allergen or maybe what we spray it with at this point.
Yeah, it could be both. Who knows? I mean, it could be an irritant on the gut. It also, I think, binds up some minerals. So could, I think, it create some mineral deficiencies.
Yeah, so I ate a ton of salmon. I ate basically a protein, a baked potato or brown rice, and I ate a vegetable.
That sounds pretty sustainable. A lot of people could live on that if they knew that their autoimmune condition would disappear from that diet, they would be all in.
And I was for about 6 months. And then as a food person, I just was bored out of my mind. Like just the monotony of it, the everyday of it, that it just felt like I couldn't expand off of that. And I remember going back to him and I'm like, how do I add food back in? He's like, you shouldn't. You should just always eat this way. And I stuck to it for another period of time. And I remember the first time we were somewhere and I ate fast food and I was like, I can't physically eat this. It tastes like chemicals on my tongue. So one of the biggest things it did was reset my taste buds. Like that first 3 or 4 weeks, food tasted bland and boring no matter what I did to it. But then as my taste buds changed, it was like, oh, this is amazing. And then anytime I tried to eat junk, it was like, oh, my God, this tastes like chemicals.
Yeah, it's so weird. I remember I used to be, like, really overweight, and I ate crap every day, and I felt fine. And it wasn't until I took everything out and ate clean. Then when I eat crap, I fucking notice it. It's like, I feel terrible. And sometimes, like, one meal could have me wrecked for a couple days, like, where I'm just trying to recover from that one crappy decision.
Yes.
And I was like, this never happened when I just drank booze all day and ate McDonald's.
Right, because your body was like – fortified against the toxins.
Maybe that, yeah. Or, you know, we notice change. It's like, you know, what do they say? Like when you're in a room with a smell, after it doesn't take long for you not to notice it. And then when you walk back in, it might be something like that.
Yeah, and I think it's amazing how much, like, I was actually starting to track calories. And I was like, I think I'm eating 2,600 calories a day and I am not gaining weight.
Well, that's probably a pretty good number for most people, 2,600.
When you're exercising a heavy amount. And I was always an exerciser, whether it was Reebok step. And that came from my days of trying to starve myself thin.
Gotcha.
You know, I would calorie in, exercise, calorie out, which we're a chemical lab. We're not a math equation.
We're very complex. We're not complicated. We're complex. Yes. So there's a lot of dynamic systems that are interacting with each other and our environment. I mean, you could eat the same thing and change your environment and have a different outcome. I mean, talk to somebody that lives in like a moldy house about that or something. So what does it mean to you now? So that's an interesting story. That's a great story. Like, I love to hear when people find a way to go through some kind of healing journey. And it was like, they did the work. They realized it was them. They're the, you know, that they are the healer. We're always our best advocate and our best doctor, really. And whenever you do heal from something, it's always you that did the healing. Like, even if somebody with, you know, letters next to their name, or whatever, gives you a pill that helps you heal, ultimately it's your body did the thing. Maybe the pill cleared some space so you could, or, but it's,
you
really
have a placebo effect of the pill anyways.
Yeah, true. I mean,
like a 30%.
It's such an important concept to stay connected with it, like how capable we are. And there's always a pressure towards healing. The body wants homeostasis. It's just sometimes we're interfering with it and we just don't know why. And you need someone to say, cut out all these 90% of things you're eating so you could start to rule them out. Did it ever come back after that? Did you ever eat something that brought the psoriasis back and you were like, oh, there was my trigger? Or do you think it was a big just general stress from having the pain, the emotional pain that we're going through at the time?
So I actually have it's a twofold theory. So I have come to understand that I'm an experiment of one. Back when I was growing up, I'm going to throw this out there. Hopefully it's not too much information. I don't think it should be. But when I was younger, if you gave me an antibiotic, I immediately got a yeast infection. And this is like 17, 18 years old. And they didn't prescribe them as much then as they did now. And they also didn't know what it did to your gut microbiome, because they also didn't use that word either.
Right.
But I would tell my doctor, if you're going to give me an antibiotic, you have to give me something for a yeast infection. Within 3 days, I'm going to get a yeast infection. And they say there's nothing like that in the literature. And I was like, I don't care about the literature. I am a person who, if you give me an antibiotic, right? Well, once I started eating healthy, I could have an antibiotic with no yeast infection.
Oh, interesting.
As I became a healthier individual. And so then you learn about the gut microbiome and you're like, of course, I had no diversity in my gut microbiome. And then the two cells that were trying to keep it together are attacked by antibiotic. Of course, my system is going to be out of whack. Well, now we know that to be true because everyone eats a much unhealthier lifestyle, much unhealthier food overall. And now we're noticing the plethora of when that happens. So I learned pretty young that I don't care what's happening out there. I'm an experiment of one. And then once I came to my life and my health with that curiosity, it's always like the science is catching up with what I would have told you, but no one would believe me because the science wasn't there and nobody was talking about it. So I could have told you at 30 a dissertation about microbiome. I didn't have the vocabulary for it, but I could talk around it to a point. I was literally changing my gut microbiome, and everything starts in the system. Your stomach is a second brain. Your heart, your stomach, and your brain are connected by the vagus nerve. I think Ellen Langer says the worst thing Descartes ever did was separate the mind and the body. We are one complex system that cannot be separated in disease or in healing. So when you look at it that way, every time I have an emotional thing, I will have an outbreak. An overly emotional grief or loss state, I will break out a little bit in psoriasis. Unless I am sleeping well and eating very... I don't have to eat clean anymore. I can have wheat. I can have dairy. But it has to be in proportion. I have to be eating a ton of vegetables, not a lot of processed food. And I mean, technically, 50% of the food that we're bringing home is processed in some way. Like your dairy is processed, that kind of stuff. But I'm talking about, for example, we used to get fried chicken, right? This doesn't sound like a very diet-friendly thing. It's not, but it's good for the soul. When it's made right, fried chicken is amazing. And my husband used to say, why are you making the sides at home? If you're buying a takeout meal, enjoy the fact that we have takeout. Take this thing off your plate and buy the stuff. So I bought mashed potatoes and broccoli. You turn them over, no exaggeration, 80 ingredients for mac and cheese, mashed potatoes. Xanthan gum, like all of that stuff. Well, we don't know what that does to us over time. You know, we are learning so much now, thankfully. But at the time that this was happening, everybody thought I was like this woo-woo crazy person. And I'm like, but I'm living proof my psoriasis is gone. But I do think autoimmune, especially because autoimmune runs in my family, when I look back as the experiment of one, I'm like, well, actually, I think my grandmother's rheumatoid arthritis started in a grief. It started with the loss of her husband and the loss of a child. You know, I think when you start looking at some pieces, stress is one of the worst things for our body. I think if you live in a zero stress environment, but you ate McDonald's, you'd be much better than eating broccoli in a high stress environment.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, but it doesn't mean you can just eat McDonald's, but it also means that we are a wholly connected system. So fast forward to I'm 50, I'm having AFib, I'm having some very distinct heart problems. And the medical community is kind of doing the, we don't see a blockage, we don't see this, we don't see this. And they send me to an electrocardiologist, the one that does the electrical impulses for your heart. But the appointment is 11 months away because this is COVID. And we don't care if you dropped dead of a heart attack, but did you get your vaccine? Can we give you, I remember being in there with my heart. Like my pulse is my heart rate is 150 and my blood pressure is like 60 over 40. And I'm like, do you know what's wrong with me? And they're like, have you had your vaccine? And I'm like, can we fix my heart? You know, that kind of panic. But when I was waiting for that appointment, I said, how do you fix AFib naturally? And it was diet. It was not high intensity exercise. It was circadian rhythm. It was these very specific tools that by the time I got to the doctor, almost had no AFib.
Yeah, that's great.
So I think, and it's really funny, yesterday my girlfriend was in the hospital unexpectedly. I was there for 6 hours. I had a radio event I had to go to. I ate takeout food, and then I ate takeout food because I'm like, I'm just trying to get something in. And this morning I woke up a little bit in a bad mood and I'm like, what's wrong with me? I have a great day. You know, I have this podcast. I have some stuff for work. And I'm like, oh, I know what it is. I haven't had a vegetable. So simple. If you've never read the book Brain Energy by Dr. Palmer, Christopher Palmer, I recommend that book to everybody. I talk about it on the radio because it talks about our metabolic health. And when you look at everything, you're like, of course, it's metabolic health.
Metabolism governs everything. Yes. That's what I've learned. It governs everything. It's the power coming into the system that runs all the apps.
Yep. So he talks about mitochondria and what the mitochondria need. And when the mitochondria don't have what they need, they shunt the resources. So I read that book when I was going through my heart problem. And it said, I'm paraphrasing and probably not accurately saying exactly what he said, but it's what I heard that I needed to hear, which was the biggest system for energy, metabolic energy, is your brain.
For sure.
The second biggest is your cardiovascular system. So I do suffer from depression and seasonal affective disorder, and I all of a sudden now I'm having these heart problems. So what do I need to do in my health to get energy back to these two systems?
You got to get out of New Hampshire, get some sun.
I did. I have. We always used to go in April, take a trip in April and September, October time period. I lived in Hawaii for 10 years.
Oh, okay.
That's got to make up for something. And my husband wanted to move back here. And I said, can you move anywhere else? So when I moved there, again, experiment of one, they really didn't consider seasonal affective disorder a real disorder.
Hello, it's Les here. I want to offer my sincere gratitude to you for tuning in. I know there are seemingly infinite options to place your attention these days, and I am humbled that you chose to spend this time with me. I also want to let you know that I am opening up a few more online private coaching sessions. I've been coaching clients for over 17 years, and I've always found it very rewarding to guide someone through a transformational phase of their life. If you would like to play a larger role in your sense of well-being, feel better in your body, and support your own healing or growth journey, please check out my services at themindfulmovement.com/less to see if we would be a good fit.
And if you take my blood labs, you can see how low my vitamin D is. In the middle of the winter, I was once tested at 9.
That's a problem.
And I don't feel good. And my doctor's trying to prescribe me antidepressants because she's like, you're depressed.
It's just the wrong toolkit.
And I'm like, I'm not depressed. I'm like, sure, I'm depressed now. Probably. But
get my vitamin D to 70 and then let's see how I feel. And if I'm still depressed.
So then I start getting shots. Well, they give me pills, but my stomach is not absorbing them. So then they start giving me shots and I'm a new person.
Oh, interesting.
Just like that. But what happened?
So you're getting vitamin D shots. I didn't even know people get shots of that.
Well, if you can't, they try to give it to you through your stomach. Like my doctor still try. She will not write the prescription for the shots, but she will write a prescription for the pills. So my insurance will only pay if I have the pills. I have to pay out of pocket for the shots. But my vitamin D doesn't stay elevated with the pills. Like it's just this.
So how often do you have to take the shots? How long does it
last? I take them for 12 weeks in the dead of winter. So I'm starting now. December I'll start.
You take it like once a week for 12 weeks? Mm-hmm. Is it something you do yourself or do you have to go to a place and get it?
I used to go to a place and I just said, I can't take the driving time. Can you just give them? And last year she gave me 12 and I just self-administered them.
And it does the trick, huh? That's interesting. There's someone in mind I want to tell that about. I'm glad I learned that.
And so I don't think... So you know how you have stomach permeability and all of that? Yeah. I also am a Mediterranean. I'm 100% Italian. And I joke I'm from a long line of sun worshippers. The bio in the back of my book says Lisa Parda is a sun-worshipping bibliophile.
I saw that.
You know, But what was interesting was I grew up in New England. I went to tanning beds when I was young. Like it was crack cocaine. You would find me every day in a tanning bed. That's how I used to get through the winter, and then we found out they were terrible.
With a Big Mac.
We found out how terrible they were. We didn't care at the time, because we were like, I either go into a deep depression and want to kill myself in the tub, or I get skin cancer at the place.
Yeah, maybe they're not terrible. I mean, I think they probably serve a purpose for some people that don't get enough sun. I don't know all the details of them, but I would think that some of that it might have a net benefit.
Well, I've talked to several people who were like, I wish we could have them now. You know, like, how do we? And then I tell them about the vitamin D shots, actually. But then my husband and I moved to Hawaii for 10 years when I was 30. And I remember waking up. We had lived there for 9 months. And I woke up and I was like, I'm rested. I have energy. I'm calm. I just felt like a different person. And I was like, it has to be the amount of sunshine. And that's when I figured it out. When I was 30, and when he wanted to move back here, our family's here, we're from here, you know, he's like, I want to go back. And I'm like, oh, can't we go anywhere else? You know? So the promise was we will go on vacation twice a year to somewhere sunny. And I came back. But what I really learned was I don't need sun in September and April. I can't go that whole winter. So I do need vitamin D. And I do pop down for much shorter trips now to Florida and just, you know, hopefully it's not raining there and I get my sunshine.
Yeah, it makes a big difference just getting it where you can like that. Sun is a big deal. I'm also a sun worshiper, and I just can't get enough. I never feel satisfied. I just feel like the more the better. And I know people talk about risks around that, and I don't know how much I buy it. And it's funny, and I know this is I've mentioned this before on here. I know I'm not the only one, but the more I've reduced the polyunsaturated fats in my diet, which I've been like really low now for probably 10 years, I just can't seem to get sunburn. And when I grew up getting sunburn every year, I grew up on, you know, the standard American diet, and it was very easy for me to get sunburn. And I didn't care at that age, though, but now I can't seem to get one.
So I have a theory on that. So I used to sunburn terribly. And while I was in Hawaii, I wore sunblock heavily. When I moved back, I'm like, I can't wear sunblock because every time the angle of the sun is hitting me, I need to be receiving it in New England. So all of a sudden, I stopped wearing sunblock. I didn't wear it as a child. I wore it in Hawaii in my 30s. I came back, I was 40, whatever, 41 or 42 when I came back, or maybe I was 40. And then I started worshiping the sun again. I didn't have to worship the sun in Hawaii because it was all the time. I would run in the morning, I would do my thing, I would go at the end of the day, and I had plenty of sunshine, plenty of vitamin D. But here, the second the sun comes up in the morning, we are outside trying to get some vitamin D. And I think the little bits of sun touching your skin when the angle is different gives you the slight bit of base, and by the time you're in June and July for the full sun, your system has enough. And now I never burn, and I tan beautifully now. And it's interesting because I never use sunblock anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I haven't used sunblock in well over 10 years, and it's interesting. I do get some sun spots, you know, in the heat of the season, and I don't know if those are bad. I just don't know. I've heard different opinions. I don't know.
Do they go away?
They generally go away. Yeah, I'd rather have the tan and some sun spots than everything go away. Like now, my tan is falling off, and I'm sad over it. And I'm in Maryland. We'll occasionally get a day where you can catch like an hour or two of sun. It's warm enough, and I take advantage of them. And now, you know, it's one of the benefits. My kids have moved out, and I miss them terrible. But one of the benefits is I will drop drawer now. Like, I will get full sun, and I love it. I just keep an ear out for, like, the Amazon truck coming down the driveway or something ready to cover up. But
so I weed in my bikini.
There you go.
I'm walking around, like, butt in the air, pulling weeds because it's like I want to get as much on my body.
Yeah, up where you are, I think you have to. I mean, I think in the New England area, you have to be very aware and very conscious about getting as much as you can. I don't think people realize how much you really need. You know, and again, you don't need the same amount to just not die that you need to be optimal, but there, if you want to really get the most out of what the sun has to offer, you have to be aware. You have to go out of your way. It doesn't just happen by accident, unless you have maybe an outdoor job or something.
Yes. Yes. If you have an outdoor job, if you're a landscaper, you're probably getting enough sunshine. But the rest of us, and we've become so indoor-oriented. You know, we're doing everything indoors now. You know, we're on the computer. We are just indoor people now. We don't have a lot of outdoor activities. I joke that I have this beautiful cul-de-sac neighborhood and none of the kids are in it. Wouldn't you have killed to run around a neighborhood that you weren't going to get run over by cars? I lived on a street where traffic went both ways.
Yeah.
And we're trying to skateboard and throw a ball around and run from traffic. You know, and then you have this beautiful cul-de-sac and I'm the one in it. There's no kids in it.
So let me ask you, Lisa, having written a book about food and dived in for so long and went through a pretty, I guess, impressive like healing journey using that as a big tool. Obviously, there must have been something about managing the stress too. But
yes,
like, what does food mean to you now? Like, what are the emotional connections you have with it?
So I'm hugely emotional connected. When I celebrate, I want food. When I'm upset, I also want a little bit of food. When I'm with people, I want food. Like, food is an emotional connection. I think convenience has killed the sacred of food for the most part. Like, when I ran to get fast food and I'm chomping it down in the car, I don't feel connected to I'm not even enjoying my French fries, for example. You know? So I think that I personally am very emotionally connected to food. And that is a blessing and it is a curse because you have to manage when you're having some like loss or grief or anxiousness that you're not eating your emotions. And if you are eating your emotions, you're doing it in a more healthy way. But my connection to people is through food. Like, if we're friends and you're having a birthday, I'm making your favorite meal on your birthday. I'm making your favorite dessert for your birthday. You know, when we're doing anything, it's a celebration. I used to watch my nephews every Thursday, and what I did was make sure that we all sat down so that my in-laws didn't pick up the kids and then run home and then do bath time. It's like we come to the house, there's a full-blown meal, we sit down, we have a meal, we wrap up, they go to bed. Like, just a routine and a ritual around food. I'm very ritualistic, as well as the fast food person, but we live very hectic lifestyles, so I'm not making everything from scratch. I'm not making my bread from scratch, for example, or stuff like that, but I do try to... One of the things about my cookbook was like, you can make this today and it stays for 3 days in your fridge, so you'll always have something healthy and you can actually take it to go in a container. It lasts for 2 hours in the car between lunch or something. So because my life, I'm a real estate broker and I live on the road, I've really found a lot of things that I can eat that are healthy that I can take with me.
Okay. So you don't make your own bread yet. Nobody's lent you some sourdough starter?
So I will tell you, I made my own pita pockets for a while.
Okay.
And then my schedule just doesn't allow for it as much now, but there was a time I was making my own French bread. Well, when you make your own French bread and you're learning to make bread, you're eating bread every day.
True.
And you have to eat the bread all in one day because it has no preservatives. So I bought sourdough starter maybe like 2 years ago, and then I went on vacation and I didn't keep it alive in the fridge, and I came home and I'm like, this kind of looks weird. Let me throw it.
Oh, it'll wake up.
Will it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they could be dormant. Sometimes I'll go a month without bacon, pull it out.
Really?
Yeah, you just gotta, like, give it a couple days to get lively again. It's a remarkable substance. Some people actually dry them out and powderize them, and you can put it in the cabinet for, like, ever, and then wake it back up.
Really?
Yeah. Microorganisms are incredible. It's their world. We're just living in it.
Yeah. So I will say that Tom Papa is one of my favorite comedians, and his whole entire page is him cutting the bread he's made.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's a funny guy. I've heard him.
He's very funny. But he's the one who inspired me. I'm like, should I get into sourdough? And I'm like, well, I'm growing my herbs. I don't know. I don't know if I have enough time in my schedule. I don't know. You know, to take on, like, perfecting a craft. I think when I was doing baking the bread, it was... Okay, why is the crust not perfect? Why is this? Oh, the temperature outside. Oh, it's too humid. Oh, it's not humid enough. I felt like it was...
You can get really nerdy about it. I do it the simple man's way. I don't even measure. And, like, my wife has a client who's, like, a baker, and she told her that I don't measure, and the baker thought it was, like, insane. And I'm like... And I'm thinking, if you make this every week or two, you should know, ballpark at least, what it looks like. Now, I'm sure if you're a restaurant or company, you have to make every one identical over and over. But I eyeball everything, comes out great every single time.
You might be my sourdough inspiration.
It's easy. And, you know, it's like 5 minutes of work and then 1 minute of work, 1 minute of work like five times that first day. And I put it in the fridge at night, and then a couple of days later, I pull it out, and I bake it for 40 minutes, 45 minutes. And then, you know, you have it, and you don't have to use it up every day. Like, we'll put it in a bag and, like, almost seal it, and it'll stay overnight just fine. The crust will lose a little bit of its crustness, but the crumb will seem fine, and it's very usable.
Can you freeze it?
I think you can. I never have. It never, you know, we usually will get, like, 2 days out of a loaf. And I'll make a loaf every week or two. But it's great. But it transforms an experience of a meal. Like, if you do make a salad or a steak or whatever, like, one of my favorite breakfasts is just, like, whatever meat was left over and from dinner and then some eggs to go with it. Mm-hmm. But if I have a piece of sourdough toast with it, it's yep. Like...
Divine.
It's just everything. Like, I'm on top of the world. When I have that, so it's
and
a great...
I don't know anyone allergic to when people have sensitivities, they never have it to fresh sourdough bread.
Yeah, actually, I think I saw a study on PubMed about that where they took, I think, full blown celiac folks and tested them with sourdough, and it was like very few of them reacted to it. There's something really important going on there, and I think, you know, they've been eating it for a very long time, probably because they figured that out very long time ago. It wasn't. You know, there is something about having the microorganisms. Like, think about it. When you eat food, you get microorganisms in your body that do all this work for you. Some of them even make, like, vitamins, and they break stuff down, and they handle the stuff that you don't digest. All you're doing is giving them a head start. You're saying, have your work on it first. Make this more digestible. You know, naturally process it for me. And it helps. And it's delicious.
It's also a living thing.
Well, I think it is until you cook it. I don't think it survives the 500-degree oven. I don't think
it does.
There's
something about the living thing of it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like you have like a pet on the counter. Like, you know, ours has a name. We sing a song to him when we feed him. Like, he's like a family. Slappy, our sourdough star's name is Slappy. He's like a member of the family. He's like, you know, pet.
I love it.
Yeah, which, you know, gives you some insight what food means to me. Like it. It matters.
Yeah. And I do think I have a huge connection, emotional connection with food. I called the book My Love Language is Food because it was a way I fell in love. It was a way I nurture myself. So I will get agitated. My husband's trying to, you're working, you're doing this. Let's just go grab dinner out. Let's make your life easier. Don't go to the supermarket again. I find myself agitated if I'm not cooking for myself at some point. And I've said to him over and over, take something else off my plate, but the cooking is okay. The supermarket, different story. I hate the supermarket. Hate it. You know why? They've ruined the experience of it. I mean, Whole Foods used to be decent. It was an arm and a leg for a mango, but the mangoes were beautiful. The baggers would practically, like, caress it into a, you know, put it in. So you get home, now everything's under it. It was bought by Amazon. Everything that was good in the store that you could only get at home, Whole Foods left. And now it's the same crap as anything else.
I guess I'm spoiled. I have some good food stores nearby. So I have it pretty good. Like, I have one of those stores you can go in. You could, like, blindly pick fruit. And it's just great, yeah. And you pay a little bit, but I like supporting. Like, I want to vote with my dollars that way. Like, I'll, you know, I'm probably wearing, like, a $9 t-shirt now because all my money goes to, like, supporting places that make good food.
So yeah. I will always spend money on food. I can have no money, but I will spend money on food. That's one thing. To me, that's what I was talking about earlier, where meat is supposed to be expensive. It was a living thing that needed to be lived and cared for. And I think one thing that I was actually thinking about this when we were kind of talking about, you know, because recently we were talking about spirituality is a circle that needs to be with the financial. It needs to be with every part of our life. The spiritual needs to come in. And I thought, wow, you know, even if you're not religious, the idea of praying over food, especially praying over animal food, I wonder if, like, I did that every single meal, every single day for a year, if it would transform anything for me. It was something that I was going to start doing.
I bet it would. I bet it could be your next book.
Ooh. Great idea.
I'll take a 10% commission on it.
10% cut. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, they've done tests where, you know, they pray to, like, water, mm-hmm. and they test it, or they...
Yes.
And it does things. So, like, your food's made of water. Like, things hold... you know, vibration and frequency, and it's got to do something. I mean,
so I'm a big
been doing it for a long time.
Believer of words matter. I actually think words have vibration. One of the things that I've always, before I really could formulate it as something I could explain, I just felt it in my heart. If my husband or my best friend would say something bad about themselves, I would say, don't talk about my John that way. Don't talk about my Robin that way. Like, I don't want to hear you talking poorly about yourself. I don't want to talk poorly about myself. I think changing language, I know over the last maybe 5 or 10 years, we've even changed language a little bit. That I remember how difficult I was in changing my own language because I kind of felt that I had formed a more loving bond with language, and I didn't like that people were weaponizing my language. But I think there is a huge... I think energetically, we are energetic beings. The more... I love learning about physics. Like, I don't think I have the brain for physics, just like I don't have the brain for true astronomy. But I'm interested in both. And I have this tiny... belief system that just because I don't understand it or know what it is, I can still believe in it.
You could still also go outside with binoculars and enjoy it.
Yes. Yes, I don't have to understand it to enjoy it and believe in it and think it's amazing. Yeah. And find... One of the things I think that happened after my heart event was I was like, I need to start finding wonder more in my daily life. And that's kind of what this shift is all about.
That sounds like a great shift. Well, it sounds like you got a lot of good lessons out of that pain.
Yeah, it's like, well, it cements in I've lost people young, so I've always known that life is impermanent, and that I remember thinking I probably won't make over like 35. I don't have a plan for after 35 when I was like 19, because I thought I'm probably not going to live after 35.
Oh, wow, you thought that. Okay. And how old are you now? You said 53?
53.
How long do you think you'll go?
It's funny. We were talking about this recently. You know, they're talking about studies to live to 120. Do I want to live to 120? Not unless my finances and my body are saying I can have fun at that age.
Interesting. Yeah, I almost feel like I would want it only if I had some loved ones hanging around too. Otherwise, that would be sucky. Because yes. If you're 120, and then you got to make sure your kids are going to make it to 100 or whatever. Like, yes. I don't want to be 120 and alone.
Yeah, like they kind of say it like, oh, our longevity is going here. And I'm like, well, maybe, but I don't want to be sitting in a nursing home from 87 to 120. They would like, why did she throw herself out the 4-story window? She was trying to fall and kill herself. She doesn't want to be in here by herself.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Like, I know there's so much stuff. I see it on, like, my feed all the time because I'm in, I don't know, like, my feeds are filled with health sphere stuff. And, you know, you get all the info from the longevity so-called experts or whatever. And, you know, there's so much stuff that there's so much money being poured in and research and development in helping giving people tools where they could stretch out their lifespan and maybe their health span. But at the same time, we're like poisoning ourselves more and more every day through our environment and
living on a device in this 2D reality. Like,
yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how it all shapes up. Like, I hope I'm alive long enough to just see how some of that stuff shakes out. And, you know, I do think that we'll have innovations that will be life-changing or for so many different things. Like, I think it will be neat if you could help somebody regrow something. If they could, like, yes. I don't know, learn how an octopus or whatever regrows something and deploy that through, you know, a cream you could rub on your elbow and the rest of your arm grows back after an injury where it gets chopped off or whatever. Like, I don't know, maybe stuff like that where they could 3D print parts better for people to improve their life. But it's like also the healthcare system, I think, is net killing people faster. So it's like there's all these different forces that they're bumping up against each other and mixing in, and there's good and bad and messy. And I guess I'm grateful that I'm here, that I get to watch a little bit of it and try to take the gems from it that I feel like serve me or my family or my loved ones and improve my ability to also find the awe in beauty in life.
So I'm a person, so very young. The medical community is amazing if you have a car accident, a heart attack, or you lose a limb. You want the Western medical community. My experience with them, in other than that capacity, because I actually almost lost my pinky, the top of my pinky finger in an accident when I was in third grade, and they reattached my hand, and I have a hand and a nail.
That's nice.
So wow. I love the medical community for that kind of thing. Miracles. I believed in them for that. But anytime I had a soft medical issue, something that couldn't be fixed with a surgery, for example, the Western medical community failed me. But I found it in very holistic types of things, acupuncture. So my girlfriend has really bad arthritis in her knee, and I'm like, why don't you just try acupuncture? She's like, I think it's feeling better. I'm going to go again. We don't know if it's a placebo effect or whatever, but
doesn't matter.
I like different attacking things from different modalities, and I'm really open to them. And the older that I am, and so the radio show has really started this whole energetic shift, because when I go to the radio show for 2 hours a week, I'm just voicing the nonsense in my head a lot of the time. I'm using it sort of as a platform to try to be funny. Like, if If I could have a next career, it would be as a comedian, but I'm never going to try to be a comedian. Never going to stand on stage at the microphone. Well, I won't say never.
Can't say never.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But I, like, practice jokes. But I can't see if they're landing. Like, I only know when people tell me about stuff after the show afterwards, or if my co-host laughs. Right? If I get her laugh, I'm happy. But I notice that I go there, and there's technically, like, what's the purpose of this show? Are you making money with it? What's, you know, what's your end game? Everyone always asks me, what's your end game? How do you make money? How is this monetizable? All of these very intelligent questions that really make sense. And I'm like, I don't know. But I feel great every time I go. And every time I come out, I have the energy. I joke that it's like 10 B12 shots. So energetically, something's happening. And it spills over into the rest of my life. So I've been on this big energy kick. And that's where I, you know, the acupuncture kind of ties in with that. And I'm loving that I'm learning a little bit more. I'm actually having an acupuncturist come on our show in December. Because he talks about, it was something he had an idea of. And he used to practice on his father's horses.
Oh, interesting.
And they would stop limping. You know, this horse would have a limp, and then he would do all this stuff, and the horse would just walk normal.
That's
so
cool. Yeah,
and then I told him, don't tell me anymore.
It's real.
Yeah. So I'm really just interested, and my, because I'm talking about this on the radio, my feed is constantly physics pages and energy work and all that other stuff. A lot of health stuff, too. And a lot of facial cream and hair cream because I'm a 50-year-old woman and they're like, she'll buy this. Just throw it to her. She'll buy it.
She didn't do it the first try? Give her a couple more tries. She'll click.
She's wrinkly and her hair is going to fall out. Show her the young girls and then show her the hair stuff.
That's funny. Well, Lisa, I really enjoyed talking to you. I feel like I could talk to you for a long time. And the show... Lisa and Robin on the mic. How do people get that? Do you have to be local, or I guess you could stream everything now?
Yep. So you can listen to it on Spotify, and you can also watch it on YouTube. And someday we'll be back up on Facebook, but I don't know.
And that's a two-hour show every, what?
Thursday.
Every Thursday?
Yep. So it's live 10 to noon, and we do it live on YouTube. And then it sits up there, and Spotify, everywhere you find podcasts, you will find Lisa and Robin on the mic.
And are you and Robin like old friends or?
No, we're new friends. Okay. We're adult best friends that just kind of came together in the last few years.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And the book, where do people get that?
You'll be able to get it on Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, Target, everywhere books are sold. It's coming out shortly. And if you follow my Instagram page or YouTube or Facebook, you will see it pushed in your face as soon as it's live for the next several weeks after that.
And how far are you from, like, the Boston area now?
I'm, like, 36 miles.
Okay. So next time I come, my sister and mother live up Byfield, Massachusetts, north of Boston. Next time I'm up, maybe I'll bring some sourdough starter and run it by you.
And come on my radio show.
Oh, sure. That'd be fun. Well, I don't know. Video. I might get you fined.
You pay the $100 every time you drop an F-bomb. You only dropped one this episode, and I felt like you were free to swear.
Maybe I'll just come and I'll just write a check up front for like $500 and then give me, you know, buy them up front. Can you do that?
We can do that. One time, it was recently, Robin wanted to say the word shit. And she goes, Shia. And like, we're like, when they're about to fly, you're like, is this one of the seven that I can't say? And you morph it into another word.
Is there a button the producer could just push to, like, beep it out? Like, there's a little delay where he has to know. Did they
no,
do that?
No, we're live.
Okay. Well, Lisa, again, it was great connecting with you. So I appreciate you reaching out. And I look forward to our paths crossing again sometime. For the listeners, hope you enjoyed the conversation. I didn't know where this was going to go today, but I really enjoyed it and hope you did too. And if you have anything to comment about it, I don't really ask much, but I was told to ask for comments. So, hey, if something you heard today resonates with you, please let me know. I appreciate it, and I hope you all have a great day out there.
Thank you so much.